Thank you all for coming. So often when people think of the deserts of North America, they picture a dry, barren landscape with only the toughest plants and animals surviving there. But actually, a lot of insect groups have diversified extensively in these regions. Tenebrion and beetles, for example, are really diverse in the deserts and arid areas of North America. Bees are more diverse in the deserts than they are in the tropics. And antlions, also diverse in the deserts, and the group that I'll be focusing on today, nocturnal velvet ants, are diverse in the deserts of North America. So the question we may ask is, why are some of these groups so diverse? What's driven this diversification? There's been two main hypotheses proposed that seek to explain the cause of this diversification. The first deals with the Pleistocene climatic oscillations. So the Pleistocene from about 1.8 million years ago to about 10,000 years ago is characterized by the many climatic phases when the climate changed from a glacial cycle, it's pictured here, these white areas are glaciers, not clouds, changed from a glacial cycle to an interglacial cycle with a warm, dry climate in the interglacial cycle, cool, wet climates in the glacial cycles. And there was many transitions between these two cycles, these transitions forcing desert-adapted taxa south into areas that remained desert-like. Then when the climate warmed, these taxa expanded north again. So these contractions and expansions drove diversification. The other hypothesis deals with vicariant events that happened in the Neogene. Before about 15 million years ago, much of North America, especially Western North America, was a humid savanna type environment. Then between about 15 million and 3 million years ago, a lot of the mountain ranges in the West rose, fragmenting the landscape and causing a lot of drying in these areas. And this fragmentation and the subsequent drying drove diversification of more arid adapted taxa. So which of these two hypotheses explains events that drove diversification in nocturnal velvet ants, and how can we know? Well, often when you analyze genetic patterns among populations of a widespread species, you can gain insights into the evolutionary history of that species. So I chose two widespread nocturnal velvet ant species to analyze these genetic patterns among the populations. I have Dilophotopsis concolor and Sphaerophthalma difficilis. Both of these species range from Canada to Mexico and from California over to Kansas. Very widespread, and also both are very abundant in the landscape and easy to collect. After I looked at both of these species more carefully, I realized they were each two species. Dilophotopsis concolor had a sister, Dilophotopsis peyron, and Sphaerophthalma difficilis has a currently undescribed species of Sphaerophthalma as a sister. So in each of the separate analyses, I included these sister species to get a more full picture of what's going on. My protocol that I followed for extraction and amplification of the DNA followed the guidelines set up by Pilgrim and Pitts in 2006. I chose two genes, the internal transcribed spacer regions 1 and 2, total of just over 1,700 base pairs. I aligned these sequences using ClustAltW and performed a Bayesian analysis using Mr. Bayes 3.1.2. The results of the Bayesian analysis of the Dilophotopsis populations and species is here. We see some interesting patterns. We see Dilophotopsis peyron down here at the bottom, restricted just to the Mojave Desert, sister to a widespread Dilophotopsis concolor. You see from the branch lengths between these two species that the species are separated by a pretty large genetic distance. Then within Dilophotopsis concolor, this big clade up here, we see well-supported clades isolated to distinct desert regions, such as this clade to the Great Basin. And among these clades, we see a grade from the warm deserts down here near the bottom going up to the cold deserts near the top. We see a similar pattern with Sphaerophthalma difficilis, the Bayesian analysis. We see a narrowly distributed undescribed species is restricted to the western Sonoran Desert of California, sister to a widespread Sphaerophthalma difficilis. Again, the branch lengths indicate that there's a relatively large genetic distance separating these two species. Then within Sphaerophthalma difficilis, we see relatively well-supported clades isolated to distinct deserts or arid regions. And again, we see the warm deserts and other temperate areas forming a grade from the warm areas up to the cold desert areas. So very similar patterns among those two species. What does this suggest? Both phylogenies show similar patterns, show a deep split between the sister species, and they show a widespread species with some isolation to the individual deserts. So which hypothesis is supported? Neogene vicariant hypothesis or the Pleistocene climatic change hypothesis? Before we can understand this, answer this question, we need to understand the two hypotheses a little bit better. First, we'll focus on the Pleistocene glacial cycles, again from about 1.8 million years ago to 10,000 years ago. So during the glacial cycle, pictured here, again remember these are glaciers, not clouds, pictured here. During the glacial cycles, fossil evidence of plants and arthropods shows that there's at least two areas of refugia. During the glacial cycles, there was desert-like landscapes here in the Sonoran Desert and also here in the Chihuahuan Desert. So the desert-adapted taxa were forced into those two areas and isolated from each other and began on their own evolutionary trajectory, and we could see speciation events taking place here. So we could see a pattern like that pattern we saw in both of those phylogenies, with sister species in some in the Sonoran Desert and others in the Chihuahuan Desert, expanding up in the interglacial cycles. The Neogene vicariant events, however, before 15 million years ago, there was a desert-like area hypothesized here in the southwest, widespread, fairly congruent. Then after the mountains rose, that was split into two major areas, again in the Sonoran Desert and in the Chihuahuan Desert. So with this hypothesis, we could also expect to see the same kind of pattern with sister species isolated here in the Sonoran Desert and here in the Chihuahuan Desert expanding north. So which of these two hypotheses is supported? Again, we don't know, but there's a great difference in the timing of these two events. One was between 15 and 3 million years ago, and one was within the last million years or so. So what we need to do is understand when that split on each of those phylogenies, when that split between sister species occurred. We need divergence dates. Unfortunately, there's no fossils of the taxa that I'm currently studying, but there are fossils of Dasymutilla, a related genus. We have this fossil from Dominican Amber, about 20 million years ago is when it's hypothesized to have existed. So what I did is I constructed a phylogeny using both the Dilophotopsis species, the Sphaerophthalma species, and Dasymutilla, so I could include the fossil to estimate the dates for some of those nodes. I estimated ITS 1 and 2 molecular clock using the program rates, and I applied that estimated clock to each of those individual phylogenies with these results. Dilophotopsis Bayesian analysis, again the same tree with dates on it. We see that the splits between Dilophotopsis sister species, and I included the third Dilophotopsis species, was between about 4 and 3 million years ago, associated with that Neogene vicariant events. And we see the splits between the populations of Dilophotopsis were around 0.7 million years ago within the Pleistocene. We see the same thing for the Sphaerophthalma phylogeny. The split between sister species was about 4 million years ago, again associated with that Neogene vicariant events, the mountain building. And we see that the splits between the populations of Sphaerophthalma difficilis began about 1 million years ago, again within the Pleistocene. So in conclusion, we see that the evolution of nocturnal velvet ants seems to be driven both by Neogene vicariant events and by the Pleistocene climatic change. The high species diversity, however, within the nocturnal velvet ants seems to be driven in large part by the Neogene events, the older events with those mountains building and causing the aridification of the West. But the Pleistocene climatic oscillations did add a lot of diversity to the population level diversity to these groups. This is interesting because it's comparable to other studies of vertebrates. We have multiple species of mice showing the same pattern. We have red-spotted toads and rattlesnakes also showing this pattern. In the future, I'd like to include additional populations to get a more full coverage of the western United States. I'd also like to analyze these same types of patterns in other nocturnal wasps, as well as other insect groups like antlions. I have a lot of people to acknowledge and a lot of organizations that provided funding, and I'll just leave this slide up for you to read while I take your questions.
Question?
Yes.
So he
asked, where are these ants living in terms of elevation? And actually, these are wasps. I didn't explain it very well. That's okay. And so they actually range. There's some that will live up to these two specific ones, is what you're asking, or just in general?
In general, I'm just interested in how it relates to sky.
Yeah, so actually, if you look closely, he asked how it relates to sky islands, sorry. If you look closely at the Sphaeropthalma phylogeny, I had a Great Basin clade. One of those that I included in the Great Basin clade was in the Mojave Desert, but was at about 8,000 feet in the Mojave Desert. So I think that could be a sky island remnant from Pleistocene times. But in general, the mutilid wasps will live as high as 8 or 9,000 feet and as low as negative feet below sea level. Yes? So he asked how I calibrated the divergence times estimates. The program rates allows you to either fix certain nodes on the tree, and you input a tree with branch lengths, and you can fix certain nodes at a certain date using that fossil. And then it uses likelihood smoothing methods to allow different clades different rates of evolution, and it does some fancy math and tells you the date. Yes. Yeah, so I fixed that date based on the Dasymutilus fossil. And, yep. Thank you.